The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab. Simona Dinnerstein has a brand new recording of Bach's Goldberg Variations on the Telarc recording label. It is a debut there. And these were recorded back in March of 2005. And they're getting some wonderful critical review, and Simona Dinnerstein has agreed to speak with me today. Hi, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, first, I'm going to say congratulations for this wonderful, wonderful new recording and this debut.
Thank you.
You're getting some very, very enthusiastic and very positive press about it, with some wonderful stories about not just the quality of this performance, but also the really sort of interesting story behind it. There's a lot of buzz talking about you and you know, supposedly an unorthodox career path and all, because you didn't win, you know, a big competition and sort of launch a big career. You've been really very steadfastly working along all these years. But, you know, I was thinking about this, and it seems as though that's almost more of more of the typical path for a professional, most professional musicians. What was your logic in this? Was this a conscious decision to sort of have your career unfold in this way?
Well, I think it's interesting what you said about how this is a more typical path, because I agree with you. I think that this is the case for the majority of musicians that I know. I think most musicians spend a certain period of time entering competitions and trying that route. And then if that doesn't work out, then, you know, need to figure out alternative ways of being able to make a career through being a musician. And that's really what happened with me. I didn't have any kind of particular plan in mind. I studied, and when I finished, actually while I was a student, I started doing some competitions and then entered a bunch of them. When I finished studying, I was in my mid-20s, and they just didn't really work for me. And so I had to try to figure out how to earn a living as a pianist. And I was accepted into a program which is presented by the Piatigorsky Foundation, and they're a foundation that has a roster of musicians that they send around the country, around the United States, playing in more alternative venues, sort of bringing classical music to people that might not otherwise be able to hear a concert. And I started to do concerts for them right after I graduated Juilliard, and I continue to play concerts for them, though not as many as I did at one time. And that was kind of, I would say that was the core of what I was doing. And then I did a lot of chamber music and a lot of collaborative playing, and I had students as well. And I just kind of basically did whatever came along. And then I was accepted into Astral Artistic Services roster, and they are an interesting organization based in Philadelphia that tries to help young artists develop their careers. And they accepted me, and I immediately became pregnant when they accepted me, which is kind of a surprise. And they were going to present me in a debut recital, and that was when I decided to learn the Goldberg Variations. And then after my son was born, Astral presented me in a recital performing them in Philadelphia. And I think that was a very important thing for me to be with Astral, because I suddenly had people really supporting me and trying to help give me advice. And then that kind of went hand in hand with me learning the Goldberg Variations, and things started to change at that point in terms of my career.
I read in some of these wonderful articles about you recently that you, as a child, asked your parents to learn to play the piano, but that they actually, was it the recorder they started you instead?
Yes, yeah. Well, that was because we were living in Rome in Italy when I was, from when I was about 4 to 7. My father's an artist, and he had the Prix de Rome, so we were living there, and he was at the American Academy in Rome. And I discovered the piano because I was taking ballet classes, and they had a pianist who would play Chopin. And that was when I heard it, and I fell in love with it. And I was only 4 when I asked to take piano lessons. And my parents didn't, you know, they didn't have a background in classical music, and they thought that seemed very young to start taking lessons. And we didn't have a piano over there. And so my father asked one of the composers who was in residence what I should do. And he advised that I take recorder lessons, which is what I did. And I studied with an actual professional recorder player who was living in Rome. And I think that that was a really wonderful experience for me because it introduced me to music in a slightly simpler way than studying the piano. And it had my first exposure to music was really through Renaissance music. And that was, I think, a wonderful way to start, you know, to start learning about music. And we happen to have family friends that are part of the wonderful Renaissance group Calliope. So from when I was a little girl, I first, you know, the first concerts I went to were of Calliope, and then playing the recorder, I enjoyed playing Renaissance music as well. So I didn't actually start taking piano lessons until I was 7 when we moved back to Brooklyn, at which point my grandmother gave me her small console piano, and I started to take lessons.
I guess my question for you, too, is why the Goldberg variations? I'm sort of intrigued now that you're talking about Calliope and Renaissance music, so I it's almost sort of changed my path on that question, but let me let you address that, because, you know, so many piano soloists would choose something that is more in the, you know, Chopin vein or something that was written for piano and not necessarily something by Bach. What is it about Bach or about the Goldberg variation specifically?
Well, Bach is my favorite composer, and he is the composer that I listen to all the time. I don't really listen to very much, you know, piano music. I like to listen to one of my favorite things to do would be to listen to Bach cantatas or to listen to the B minor mass or the Brandenburg concertos or the cello suites or all of that. And I also went through a serious Glenn Gould phase. I mean, I still love Glenn Gould, but there was a time when I was a teenager and early adult that I basically only listened to Glenn Gould. And so I think that Bach has kind of become part of my my personality. You know, it's sort of, I just identify so closely with his music. And in terms of the Goldberg variations, this is a piece that I first listened to when I was 13 and fell in love with right from the moment that I heard the beginning of the aria. And it was actually the first CD that was ever given to me when I bought my first CD player, and it's a very important piece for me. And I think that sometimes if you listen to music and you think about it for many years, then you suddenly realize that actually you've internalized it in some kind of way, and it's something that you feel ready to express yourself. Like, there are certain pieces of music that I expect that will happen with me. I have a feeling that Beethoven 4th Piano Concerto, which I've not learned yet, is a piece that is going to be something that I'm going to want to play, that I have thought about for many, many years. And I think that the Goldberg Variations was something that was kind of resting in me for a very long time. And then when I became pregnant, and, you know, I knew I had this big recital coming up, and I needed to learn, you know, a program for that. But when I became pregnant, somehow or other, it just felt like the time to learn this piece. And I don't know. I wasn't being very planful about it. It just kind of came to me that this was the piece that I felt ready to do, and it felt very significant. And I think that the whole idea about becoming a mother felt very significant to me as well, because it was something that I'd thought about for a long time. I actually started really thinking about how was I going to be able to be a mother and be a pianist. I started thinking about this when I was as young as 15, that kind of thinking ahead. And I think maybe I was concerned about it because there aren't really all that many role models in that respect that I could see. I mean, most of the women pianists, first of all, there aren't that many women pianists that you really hear about as really being in the public eye, and it just seems like something that's very difficult to do, to have a child and be a pianist. So I think I was thinking about all of these things, and it just kind of all came together at that time that I felt that I was ready to do this big piece, since I was ready to become a mother as well.
So how is that working out for you now that your son is a few years old?
Yeah. Well, now Adrian's 5, and it's very funny how things work out because, you know, really from when he was a little baby, I started to suddenly get asked to play many more concerts. And it was very strange because I had thought that when I had a child that I'd somehow be taken less seriously as a pianist, which I suppose is a fear that most women have in all different professions, that when they become a mother, somehow professionally they will be not as well respected, or they feel like they need to prove something. And I don't know, but things started to change, and I think that my playing became better, and I became a lot more focused. And so it's been very challenging because, you know, juggling, practicing, and traveling, and, you know, being a good mother is very challenging. But I'm really lucky in that my husband takes being a father very seriously, and he's a wonderful father, and he spends a lot of time with our son. And so whenever he can, we all travel together. So he'll bring Adrian, and this past weekend I played in Baltimore, and we all went down there together. And my parents live close by, and they've been extremely helpful. And so we've somehow managed to do this without having a babysitter living with us. And I think Adrian seems to be turning out all right, but, you know, I guess I'll find out when he's an adult.
So does he play any music yet at 5?
You know, he took piano lessons last year, and he actually, he's very musical and he's very rhythmic, and he actually likes to improvise a lot on the piano. And so I think we've kind of decided that we're going to sort of put the lessons on hold, and he's just having fun, you know, playing for himself.
So you really have kind of had a change in the kind of attention that you're getting in your life. You know, you've been a musician, you've been plugging along, you've been doing all this performing, and but now you're having conversations with people like me, and the New York Times is calling, and all of that. And I'm wondering, you know, how has your day-to-day life changed now?
It's a kind of strange time because this is happening. I would say the past 2 years have become, you know, more and more. I feel like I've been getting more attention from the press, I suppose, but the past 2 weeks, it's been just an acceleration of attention, and it's very exciting, and you know, it's kind of like a dream, but also there's something about it that's a little bit disconcerting, I have to say. And I think that I'm just trying to just stay normal. You know, I think that, you know, in terms of my day-to-day life, nothing's really changed. I mean, I'm playing concerts that were scheduled a long time ago, and everything, you know, my son started school, my husband started teaching at his school, and we're just kind of, you know, doing everything that we normally do. It's just a little weird. I don't know. I mean, I'm very excited about it, and I think that I don't know how it's going to, I don't know how long-lasting this will be, but the main thing is that I feel really so touched, and it means so much to me that the recording is being heard, and that I'm getting some really wonderful responses from people that feel really, you know, that the music has said something to them. And I think that, you know, that's what it's about, really. I mean, that's why I play, and that's why any musician plays, is because they want to express something, or they feel they have something to express, and it's kind of necessary to express. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the most important thing going on here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any recording projects lined up already, any repertory chosen?
Well, Telark and I have been in discussion about this, and I think that we have something very exciting planned, but I can't quite tell you yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing I know, I mean, there are many, many recordings of Bach's Goldberg Variations, and yet one thing that keeps coming back, and I have to say I agree, having listened to it, you know, listened to your recording myself and having heard a number of the others, that there really is something very profound and very sort of different about this. But I don't necessarily know what it is, or I can't really articulate what it is. And I'm wondering if you can, if you consciously approach this differently, or whether it's just something that happens so naturally and is just such an inherent part of the way you hear and experience the Goldberg Variations. Can you talk a little bit about how your performance is different from other pianists?
I think that the way that I think about playing, about being a pianist, and how I approach pretty much everything that I play is, I would say that I have a tendency to play or to think about music in a very lyrical way, and to think about the human voice a lot, not necessarily just in terms of singing, but in terms of speech. And I think that the Goldberg Variations, to me, the way that it's written, to me, sounds like speech, like the articulation of speaking. And so I would say that that might have been in my head when I was playing it. I also am very interested in sound, in timbre and touch, and I happen to be using a pretty amazing piano for this recording. So I think that that really inspired me as well in terms of the kind of, it inspired me in terms of the shapes of the phrases, because I could do certain things on this piano that weren't possible on other pianos, so it enabled me to shape the phrases in a certain way and to bring out the voices in a certain way. I feel like there was a lot of, I felt a lot of interplay between the different voices, because I actually was able to hear all of them so well on this piano because it has such a beautiful sustaining sound. So the counterpoint really started to come out to me and come into focus. But I can't say that I set out to play it differently than anyone else. I just, I had kept on, you know, searching for what seemed right to me, and I didn't record it until I felt like I felt, you know, that I had a real idea about how I felt the piece should be. But, you know, playing a piece of music like this, there's so many different ways of playing it, and that's also what's so fascinating about it, is to listen to the different recordings and hear, you know, hear things that you just never would have thought of. Mm-hmm. When I was working on the piece, I stopped listening to anything because it was really a little disconcerting to hear other ideas. Because then you'd kind of think, well, you could go in a completely different direction with the way you'd be playing it. But I kind of felt like I when I really listened to myself and I listened to, I guess what I would call my inner ear, the way I felt it was very intimate, and as I said, in a way, like I was speaking the music.
Hmm. How is it different, especially in light of what you've just said about how you hear it and it's sort of an inner ear? How is it different? Because you also mentioned earlier that you do and have done a lot of chamber music, and that's just such a different, you know, it can't be in your head. You have to be communicating that with the other musicians. How do you approach playing as a soloist differently from playing in chamber music?
Well, I think that chamber music has really influenced how I play as a soloist, because I would regard pretty much all piano music as being chamber music, but it's several voices playing together at the same time, and it is about communication between those voices. I would say that in the Goldberg Variations, that's particularly true, because most of them are with three voices. And so I think that all of the experience I've had with playing with other people and having to listen to them and respond to them and them having to respond to me, and how that all changes the nature of what comes out, has been a really interesting process to go through. So when I'm playing by myself, I try to really hear different instruments in what I'm playing, and then I try to have them, you know, play with each other. So I guess inner ear, I would say, is the concept that you have in your head, or the idea that you have in your head, and then your outer ear is the one that kind of makes sure that those ideas get realized. And I think that happens in chamber music too. It just is that you need to all agree on what is it that you're going to try to articulate.
Hmm.
I
was looking at the press release for this particular recording of Goldberg Variations, and you are quoted as saying, we live in a world that is unimaginably different from Bach's, but this piece speaks to us as powerfully as though it was written for our time. Can you explain that? Can you explain and describe why that is?
Well, it's something that I thought about a lot, and I think that some early music, or frankly any classical music from any period of time, seems very much of its time. For instance, I would say that, you know, as much as I love Brahms, say, I mean, one of my favorite composers, I would say that a lot of people today who are not sort of read in classical music would maybe not relate to the music of Brahms, because it's so kind of lush and romantic, and it has a kind of language that is very different than the music that we hear today around us. Just, you know, walking down the street and hearing coming from cars, and you know, when you go into stores and you hear music, there's nothing really that relates to Brahms going on today. Whereas for some reason I feel that Bach, and in particular this piece, has a kind of purity, and there's something about it that is so kind of open to any interpretation. You know, even when you're listening to it, even if you're listening to a particular recording of it, it's more open to how you're feeling at that moment. And I think that because of that, it's something that more people could relate to. It somehow doesn't feel tied to a particular period of time to me. Hmm. I think it could have been, you know, I think that there's music today that could sound like parts of the Goldberg Variations.
Like what?
Well, I would say that certain types of jazz, I think, relate to it. And I think even, you know, if you're going to go kind of far, reaching a little far out here, but I would say that certain minimalist music relates to it. And frankly, even some kinds of New Age music, you could say, relate to it. I know some people will hate me for saying that. I'm not a big fan of New Age music. But I guess there seems to be something about this music that is more abstract to me. And because it's abstract, I feel that it's more open to different kinds of opinions. I'm not very good at articulating this, but I have noticed also that many people that I've talked to who don't listen to classical music, when they listen to this piece, they have an immediate response to it. And they don't have that kind of immediate response to you know, Schumann or, I don't know, even Mozart sounds very, I don't know, it seems very much of his time. Bach, to me, seems like a composer that people from many different generations over this, you know, the 200 and something years since he's been alive have interpreted and brought into the context of their period of time. I think he meant something particular to Mendelssohn, and I think he means something else to people like, you know, Thelonious Monk.
Well, we are just so excited to have this recording, and congratulations on this wonderful success.
Thank you.
And can't wait to hear what you have next.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for making time to speak with me.